Hello, I'm Curtis Powers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I've got a special guest for you coming up in just a minute or two. Alex Newman is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the United Nations power grab for totalitarian control. A lot of things are going on right now where the United Nations is trying to get totalitarian control over emergencies or crises. But of course, the way it's laid out, they are the ones that define what that is, whether it's a climate crisis or a pandemic or whatever it might be. But I think you'll really enjoy this. We cover a lot of great content. I also wanted to thank those of you that are subscribers. Thank you so much for doing that. I don't mention it every week, but we are so grateful for you. And those of you that watch these videos every week, we would really appreciate you going to agendaweekly.com and become a subscriber where you can get all the different things we provide each week. The news brief, prayer and action items, and other different videos and articles and things that we think are important. And I'm letting you know that those that are subscribers this week, you can share the link we're going to send you with family, friends, like-minded people that you think might enjoy Agenda Weekly, and they'll be able to see all the content we provide. So we would appreciate if you would help us get the word out to as many people as possible and share that link and send it out, and hopefully we'll get some new subscribers, people that appreciate what we're doing through that. There's one key point I wanted to bring up before we get into the interview that I talked to my family about, because I think all of us need to be careful with what's going on right now. We need to be alert wherever we are. The open border, you know, close to 6 million people have come in. And these aren't just people that want a better life. Some of them might be like that. These are prisoners. These are mental health patients. All over the world, governments are opening up their prisons and sending the people to America. Their mental health facilities, opening them up and sending to America. Why? Because they don't want to pay to take care of them. And so we're getting so many different type people coming in. And then, of course, Chinese communists are coming in by the droves. The drug cartel is pumping in the fentanyl and other drugs and human trafficking like we can't believe. But the border is open for total collapse. That's why it's open. That's why they ignore what's going on there. Anyone would say it's a crisis. Anyone and everyone, except those that are purposefully creating the crisis to destroy our country. And I was thinking of, it's like the Tower of Babel too. When you let millions of people come in that don't speak your language, or you can't communicate, of course you're not going to be able to get along, because you can't even ask them how they're doing or say hello or whatever. So there's no way for them to get a job, because there's no need for people that don't speak the language here. There's nothing you could do to buy or sell things to people because you can't communicate with them. But also it divides our country up into all these little groups that are speaking different languages and things. But be alert. These shootings, these terror events that are happening more and more frequently, I think are going to accelerate at a tremendous rate. I just think we need to be alert wherever we go, because they need enough of these events to happen so they can try to get the guns. Just like Biden said this week, he said we need to eliminate the Second Amendment and confiscate all semi-automatic weapons. Well, that's never even been said by a president before. They've talked about, well, some of these certain weapons or things, but to even talk like that is a new phase in our country. And if they can create enough chaos, enough crime, if they can get one of these shootings to happen every single day of the week for a month or something, they might be successful in convincing the cowards we have representing us that, oh, this is going to help with the problem. But I want to tell you, as you know, the more mass shootings there are, the more criminals that are just doing these atrocities, that's more reason for the average person to be armed. That's more reason to make sure everyone is armed and knows how to use that weapon appropriately. Anyone that ever tries to disarm law-abiding citizens is evil, period. No one that's well-meaning, no one that cares would ever do that. But that's where we are. So be prepared, be prayerful, be alert, be purposeful in all you do, because I think it's a dangerous situation we're approaching in this country, where when you have millions coming in and then all the criminals that are already here in the big cities and everything, they realize now crime's not being prosecuted anymore. So they're just going for broke, and it's all a key piece of the plan. But thank you for joining me today. I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. Alex Newman, thank you so much for joining me again today.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you, Curtis.
I appreciate all the work you do and all the content that you produce. And one of your recent articles, it said, UN seeks vast new powers for global emergencies. And I want to talk to you about that and a lot of different aspects of that, because things are changing rapidly, aren't they?
They are. And of course, the progress of change is accelerating in a way that certainly I've never seen in my life, and that may be almost unprecedented in recent memory. So
I agree. It's like that. Well, I'd like you to start out by just giving everyone a little bit of background on the United Nations and the World Health Organization. You know, what was their stated purpose? What were they supposed to be about back when they were founded?
Well, from the very beginning, the rhetoric that was taking place kind of in the halls of power was very different from the rhetoric that was being offered to the public. You know, the world had just come out of World War II. Populations around the world were really just unbelievably weary. I think it's hard for us today to fathom how difficult life was for a lot of people back then. Many of them lost family members in the war. Sometimes their cities were bombed into the ground. Even the people who were in kind of neutral countries like the Swedes, you know, they had rationing. You know, there wasn't a lot of goods and services available. And this really was something that affected the whole world. So people were just sick of war. People were sick of fighting. And along comes this group of people saying, hey, we're going to create an institution that's going to prevent future wars. And, you know, that was music to everybody's ears. That's what they wanted to hear. Anything to make this stop. Right. We just want to go back to normal. We just want to get back to farming or running our business, enjoying our family. So people were hearing this wonderful, lofty rhetoric about we're going to have peace and we're going to have security. And of course, the Bible has a warning about that. But behind the kind of the media presentation of this, there was a whole nother narrative. And it's not that this was secret. It's not that you had to kind of go into the corridors of the secret societies to find out what was going on. And in many cases, they were talking about this fairly openly. One very obvious example, a book put out by the U.S. Secretary of State in 1950 called War or Peace. This was by John Foster Dulles, one of the founders of the Council on Foreign Relations, a brother, of course, of the CIA bigwig Alan Dulles. And he said explicitly in this book that the UN was always intended to be an organization that would be progressively strengthened until it became a world federalist organization, or he just came out and said it, a world government. And he actually said, you know, the world government could easily be carried out under the charter of the United Nations. It's not that we have to go back and reinvent the wheel and create a new charter. He believed that even the existing institution, as it was constituted, could be strengthened under its existing charter to truly serve as a one world government. So you have the globalist thread was there. It wasn't necessarily hidden, although it wasn't necessarily broadcast to the public. And then you had a parallel track, and that was the totalitarian track that also was not so much. I mean, it wasn't quite as open as the globalist track, but it was there for everybody to see. Obviously, the Soviet Union was one of the major victorious powers after World War II, mostly because the U.S. government was funding Stalin. The U.S. government was building factories, the U.S. government. And yeah, they sacrificed millions of their people to defeat Hitler. But we have to remember they were allies of Hitler not too long before that. In fact, the communists and the National Socialists didn't have that much to disagree on, other than, you know, which particular gangster was going to be in charge and some of the racial quackery. But you had Joseph Stalin, and of course, his minion, Foreign Minister Molotov, was the representative of the Soviet Union. And he really was one of the key players in organizing this. And we know quite a bit about Stalin. We know quite a bit about his ambitions. He wanted a global totalitarian regime with himself at the helm. And then our guy who we sent, and I talk about this guy all the time because he's just been wiped out of the history books, Alger Hiss, a very prominent American. They made him the chairman of the conference that wrote the UN Charter in San Francisco. He took all the delegates down to the Bohemian Grove in Northern California, where, you know, we don't know everything that they did, but we can assume based on what we know they do there that they were engaged in bizarre practices and rituals and things like this. And then, of course, later we threw him in prison. He was prosecuted because we found out he was working for Joseph Stalin. So that's kind of the background of the UN, right? People think that this is a new phenomenon, that totalitarians and globalists are running this institution and using it to erode our freedoms and our national sovereignty. That was the plan from the beginning. It's just becoming more obvious to the public now.
And that Alger Hiss point, I know most of you watching this know that, but it's just mind-boggling how the communists were so just committed and so forward-thinking that, you know, yeah, 100 years ago, they're just working their way into any position possible. And then they're the ones that get put in charge of, oh, yeah, the Soviet spy. Hey, why don't you start the United Nations and kind of get it all going? It's so crazy. It's kind of hard to believe, except we know it is true and it's facts, but it's amazing how ignorant so many in America were to some of that going on. So that's what they were wanting to do from the beginning. We know that. But they were, like you said, it was very appealing to the people of the world because World War One and then World War Two, just the slaughter of hundreds of millions of people. They were like, we want peace at any cost, which is totally understandable when your boys have been dying and dying and suffering. But if we look back over since World War II to the present, they haven't been very successful at that. They've tried to do things that, and it just hasn't worked. But some new things are happening, and I want you to talk about that now. What is the new power grab that they seek? What are they trying to do to finally put some teeth into their words, into their plans?
Yeah, well, there's several efforts to further empower the United Nations and its agencies that are all moving forward very rapidly in parallel with each other. I just broke a big article recently on the front page of the Epoch Times about a proposal made by the Secretary General of the United Nations, who also comes out of this worldview. He's a globalist. Before taking over the UN, he was running the Socialist International, which largest alliance in the world of socialist and communist political parties. Some of their members have the blood of millions of innocent people on their hands. Ruthless organization dedicated completely to a one world socialist system. So it's quite appropriate that they would put him in charge of the UN. But his proposal, this was actually released a couple months ago. It's part of a broader set of policy proposals that they're calling Our Common Agenda. And all of these are very troubling, but I narrowed in on this one because I believe it's the most significant. And to kind of summarize it, it's, you know, a few dozen pages long, but to kind of summarize, it would turn the United Nations into, in the words of the document, the primary decision-making authority during any kind of global emergency. And of course, the global emergency would be declared by the Secretary General of the United Nations. And as you read the text of this document, you very rapidly realize that it doesn't necessarily have to be global, and it doesn't necessarily have to be an emergency. If the Secretary General decrees that some complex international shock or crisis has occurred, then all of the nation states, the private sector, right, our companies, our businesses, the non-governmental organizations, the experts, public health, all of them would come under then the decision-making authority of the United Nations. And, you know, they're not very specific about, you know, this threshold would have to be met, a million people would have to die. There really are not much in terms of details or specifics, but they give some examples of the kind of things that might qualify, and that in and of itself is very troubling. They list climate change, which, you know, they say everything is climate change. You know, there was a hurricane, there was a drought, there was too much rain, there was not enough rain, there was too much snow, not enough snow. Everything is climate change. They say environmental degradation, which, again, you know, we have environmental degradation. Anything could be claimed to be environmental degradation. A river dried up, an iceberg melted, you know, it could be anything. They talk about an event in outer space, which, you know, no real details on what that might be, although the UN appointed an ambassador for outer space some years ago. They've got you know, economic crisis, a stop in the flow of people or goods or capital, right? If maybe some nation decided to close its borders. And then they have the catch-all, a black swan event, which we don't know what it is, but we might need to invoke these emergency powers. And so under the proposal, the UN would put in place these kinds of protocols, like here's what happens when the Secretary General declares an emergency. And again, it's very light on details, but from the big picture that they offer, it would functionally make the Secretary General a global dictator for the duration of the crisis. And he's the one who determines what is the crisis. So, very, very significant proposal. This, of course, is moving in parallel with the World Health Organization's power grabs, with another element of the Our Common Agenda, which involves appointing a special representative to the future who would be in charge of determining, you know, what are the future needs of people. Therefore, you can't chop down any more trees, you can't get any more coal, you can't get any more oil. So all of these things, when you take them together, it's very clear that the ultimate objective is to finally come out of the closet and establish a one world government with authority over our national governments, our state governments, our local governments, our businesses, our families, our educational institutions, and any other institution that you can think of.
And they would be responsible for defining emergency, defining crisis, and then the plan of action. That is unbelievable. Now, how does this fit into, or is it overlapping with the pandemic treaty with the World Health Organization? How do those fit together?
So one of the things about the United Nations is they're very much constituted like we typically think of a state, right? When a normal person today thinks of a state, what defines a state? You know, obviously we have the one thing would be territory. Well, for the UN, territory is the whole planet. But in terms of the different apparati that make up a state, you've got a court system. Well, the UN's got a court system, right? They have the International Court of Justice. They've got the International Criminal Court. So they've got multiple judiciary bodies. They have law enforcement. They have multiple tracks for law enforcement. They've got their own UN law enforcement system. They've got their sister organization, Interpol, which actually defines itself as an international law enforcement agency. They've got the UN COPS program, where they're bringing the national chiefs of police from all the governments of the world together and trying to standardize and really take control of national police forces. Then they've got their military apparatus. They call it peacekeeping troops, but it is a military force. They have intervened with weapons of war repeatedly throughout their history, almost always in horrific, horrific fashion. You can go back and look at the very first major one that they did in Katanga, where they slaughtered women and children, bombed hospitals, raped a bunch of people to force this province that had declared independence and wanted to be Christian, Western-minded. They forced them back under the rule of a mass-murdering Soviet-backed communist dictator. So that's the kind of thing that they mean with peacekeeping. They've got an environmental agency, right? The UN Environment Program. They've got the World Health Organization, which is kind of, they want to turn it into the equivalent of the Department of Health and Human Services, CDC, FDA, all wrapped into one. And right now, the World Health Organization is moving very rapidly on its own two power grabs. And so there's two parallel tracks with the World Health Organization. One is they were calling it the International Pandemic Treaty. They very rapidly realized that this language was going to be problematic because the U.S. Senate is not going to ratify that. And of course, our Constitution requires that all treaties be ratified by the U.S. Senate. So now they've rechristened it the International Pandemic Accord, which they're now telling us won't actually require Senate ratification. Which obviously is ludicrous, but that's what they're saying. And so this power grab, it's being negotiated right now, and it would effectively turn the World Health Organization into an institution more powerful with more authority than even the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services claims for itself. It would give it power to redistribute medical supplies, medical countermeasures, vaccine. Not that we necessarily want these things, but it would give the WHO the power to seize them from, say, the United States and redistribute them to some country under the guise of equity. It would give the Secretary General the power, based on the drafts that we've seen, the power, or the Director General, he's called, the guy who runs the WHO, who incidentally is also a communist. Prior to being installed there with help from communist China, he was on the Politburo of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which is a mass-murdering ethno-Marxist terrorist group, so described by numerous Western governments, including our own. So that's the guy who's running this, and he would have the power to say, well, that is a public health emergency of international concern, which then would activate all of these international protocols, force nation states to obey, force companies to obey. So it's very similar to what the UN is doing, but just more narrowly focused on health. But I say more narrowly focused, and I give a word of caution here, because the director general himself, I was in Egypt a few months ago for the UN climate summit. And this guy comes out and says that climate change is actually an international health emergency. They have said that racism is a health emergency. They've said that gun violence is a health emergency. So they're defining everything as a health emergency, and they're saying that if there is a health emergency, the World Health Organization basically assumes dictatorial powers. And if you think the 3 years of COVID was bad, you ain't seen nothing yet, right? Yes, most of those policies were promoted and put into place, through the machinations of the World Health Organization, but they didn't necessarily have the power to compel anyone to do that. They used more, you know, they call it voluntary. It's not exactly voluntary. But under this international pandemic accord, they would then be usurping powers to mandate these kinds of things. Now, in parallel with the accord, they're working on another power grab, which is related and which really aims to accomplish essentially the same objectives through a different mechanism. These are amendments to what they call the international health regulations. And I think there's an element of deliberately trying to make this as confusing as possible. And so I'm trying to make it simple. But the international health regulations govern various elements of the response of the World Health Organization when there are, for example, international health emergencies. And right now, for example, they say that human rights have to be a central focus of the World Health Organization's response. Well, under the amendments, they would be deleting that, or at least under the most recent ones I saw, they would delete the focus on human rights and just kind of forget human rights while we're protecting people from whatever real or imagined health emergency we have. So this is another power grab. And again, they're saying this doesn't have to be ratified by the U.S. Senate because it's just an amendment to the regulations from a treaty that has already been approved by the Senate. So very, very significant power grabs. They're actually going to be meeting in, I think, from May 21st through the end of the month to iron out the final details. It's about as opaque as you can get. Like, there's no way you can like file a Freedom of Information Act request. There's nobody, no bureaucrat that you can call and say, hey, could you send me a copy of the draft, please? So they make this deliberately difficult to follow, deliberately difficult to understand. But we have seen some of the drafts, and what we have seen so far is extremely, extremely troubling, Curtis.
Oh. No, they don't take no for an answer. they are so just committed, satanically committed to their cause of just absolute power and control. It's shocking. Now, you mentioned this barely, but I want you to talk for a couple minutes about it. Because a lot of people, you think of the United Nations and you don't think much of it. The average person would say, they do good stuff or whatever. It would be very vague what they would even know about it. And they wouldn't understand, you know, even what it's done very much over time. But just talk for a minute about all the atrocities they've been involved in, from, and just some ones to remind you, you know, Rwanda, you know, the slaughter of 800,000 people there that they oversaw. They were in town. I had a missionary friend of mine that's from there, and he was there when that happened. And he said, we pleaded with them and they wouldn't do anything except provide body bags for when it was done. They wouldn't come out. They would, you know, and people, if you don't know about this massacre, it's estimated about 800,000 ethnic minority Tutsi people were slaughtered with machetes while the UN is right there and they don't do anything to stop it. Once it's done, they provide body bags. And I mean, but talk about that and human trafficking, the drug running, the rapes, what have they actually done since World War II that we know of, and which makes us realize we can't trust them with anything.
Yeah. So if you look at the track record of the UN when it comes to dealing with the emergencies that it has dealt with, it is an unmitigated history of atrocities and barbarism and savagery with absolute impunity. And I mean, impunity in the truest sense of the term. These are people who have diplomatic immunity. They cannot be arrested. They cannot be questioned. They cannot have their luggage searched. They cannot have their documents looked at. In many cases, they don't even pay any kind of taxes. It's truly unbelievable the level of impunity they have. And I think that's part of what contributes to the horror everywhere the UN goes. And so, you know, I mentioned earlier Katanga. That was really the first big UN peacekeeping mission. And I encourage people to go study this. What they did there was so monstrous. You had an individual who was very pro-Western. He was a Christian. He was very much in favor of free markets and private property rights. His name was Moise Tshombe. And he determined that he didn't want Katanga, his area of the Congo, to live under this brutal dictator who had been installed by the Soviet Union. And so he declared independence with the support of his people. He was pro-United States. In fact, he was a U.S. ally. And the United Nations determined that this was unacceptable because they were violating the territorial integrity of a mass-murdering communist dictatorship. So they went in there with armed troops and attack helicopters and slaughtered enormous numbers of civilians. I mean, they were even firing on cars of civilians trying to flee the conflict zone. Why would you do that, right? Why would you do that except to be evil? And you know, one of the stories that I have really covered extensively, and only recently has the rest of the world kind of started paying attention. It's heartbreaking to look at it, but the UN has this multi-decade long track record of raping children. And it's not like an aberration. It's, you know, you often hear people say, well, it was just a few bad apples. No, it's not. It happens over and over and over again every time the UN's peacekeeping forces get deployed. And the only people who get punished are the people who try to stop it, the people who try to expose it. And you think I'm kidding, and yet I'm not. I've had people from the highest levels of the United Nations reach out to me just in despair about, like, what is going on here? I don't understand, because they don't understand what the UN is really about. And I'll give you an example. A very clear example. In the Central African Republic, there were a bunch of international peacekeeping troops deployed. They're under the authority of a UN mission, and they were kidnapping children, some as young as like 7 years old, dragging them onto the UN military base, and just passing them around for all these, so just without getting too graphic, just systematically raping and abusing these children. And a gentleman at the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva found out about this. His name was Anders Kompass. He was a Swede. He said, "This is horrific. What's going on here? We need to stop this." And so he raised the concern with the highest levels of the UN human rights bureaucracy. It was an Islamic prince who was not interested at all in doing anything about this. So he said, "Well, we have to do something." So he went to French prosecutors. He went to the French government and said, "Look, there are troops down there that are raping children." And you know, the Central African Republic has a long historical relationship with the French. It used to be a colony. So he said, "We have to do something. We can't just let all these children be systematically raped like this by international peace troops." Well, the French government decided to try to do something, and the UN human rights bureaucracy retaliated against Anders Kompass. They marched him out of his office under armed guard. They demonized him in the press. They acted like he was being disloyal by exposing all this. And so a lady I had been in communication with, she was the Undersecretary General for the Office of Internal Oversight Services, which is basically like the UN's internal policing mechanism. And you know, all of our communications have been off record. And she's like, "Alex, I'm done. This is crazy. Somebody has to speak out about this. Meet me on this island." So we met on this island in the Baltic Sea, and we talked for a few hours. Part of it was off the record, but part of it said, "Look, I just can't do this anymore. Somebody has to speak out." The Anders Kompass should have received a medal for his heroic efforts to stop this horrific abuse. Instead, he was treated like some sort of criminal. He was treated like the child rapist. This is exactly backwards, and they were protecting the child rapist. So this is just really the tip of the iceberg. They got caught doing this in the former Yugoslavia. They were kidnapping children, trafficking them into the sex trade. They got caught doing this in Haiti over and over and over again. In Mali, they were running around slaughtering civilians and protesters and raping kids. Anywhere they go, they were doing this in Southeast Asia, anywhere where the UN's peace troops are deployed. And peace troops, it's almost like an oxymoron. What you find is this horrific trail of sexual abuse, of child sex trafficking, abuse of the local population. And it's at the point where even globalists in America recognize this. Senator Bob Corker, he was a big wig on the U.S. Senate Foreign Affairs Committee before he stepped down. He was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And he said publicly, "If I found out that UN troops were on their way to America, I'd be on the first plane home to hide my wife and my children." And you know, that's a compelling statement coming from a guy who for decades helped fund the UN, who's a member of the organization, the CFR, that really paved the way for the creation of the UN. It's completely out of control. And again, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Everywhere they go, they make a mess of things. In Haiti, they you know, released a bunch of sewage into a river, killed tens of thousands of people with cholera, sickened hundreds of thousands of people with cholera. Never any accountability. When they're sued in a court, they say, "We have immunity. You can't sue us." They got caught in communist China, the UN Population Fund, helping the communist Chinese regime perpetrate forced abortions to implement their one-child policy. In Kenya, about a decade ago, they were doing a tetanus vaccination campaign. Turns out it was a sterilization campaign, as testified to by every single Catholic bishop in the nation of Kenya. The Kenya Catholic Doctors Association got samples of these vaccines the UN was using. They sent them to laboratories all over the world. Every single one was laced with beta HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin. So these women of childbearing age were being injected with these tetanus vaccines. Their body was treating this critical hormone as an invader that needed to be destroyed by the immune system. And of course, you can't carry a pregnancy to term without that. So everywhere you go, the UN is engaged in horrific atrocities, horrific abuses. The idea that we would put them, and again, with total impunity. These people are never held accountable. They're never arrested, nothing. The idea that we would give them even more power after this track record, frankly, it shouldn't even be a topic of discussion, and yet it's moving forward very quickly.
I hope people watching this, you understand they're a horrible organization. It's not just like, well, it's not that great. It's a bunch of ruthless thugs that want total control over you and your children and your grandchildren. And I know the John Birch Society for decades has been saying, get us out of the United Nations. And we need to keep speaking that line and talking to our representatives and things about that. Because as more of these things get exposed, there'll be more people going, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get them out of here. We don't want them in our country, and we don't want to be part of what they're doing because it's evil and it is completely evil. And we could go on for another hour about the drug trafficking and all the different things they do. Okay, so going into kind of what this would look like if they're able to pass these things, because that's important to know. We know what they're trying to do, but if it passes, what would the emergency platform look like? Even if you talk about another pandemic or climate change, what kind of control, average person watching this, what would they literally be able to tell them they had to do, whether they wanted to or not? And that would be enforced also. It wouldn't just be words. And how would they enforce it? And how would that work, maybe possibly look?
Yeah, one of the things that was so interesting about this thing is the lack of details. So there really is nothing concrete in there, but they do make clear that the UN and its multilateral subsidiaries, like UNESCO, for example, on education, like the UN Environment Program on the environment, like the World Health Organization on health, that they would be, in the words of the document, the primary decision-making authority. And so it says the Secretary General would convene the member states, would convene the private sector, would convene the non-governmental organizations, which presumably would include the churches, the religious leaders, and basically give them instructions. And so I think what we just saw with COVID is a really good illustration of what we could expect, although even more dramatic. And so with COVID, we had the World Health Organization determining, for example, what could be said on the internet, right? You had the CEO of YouTube publicly come out and say anything that violates World Health Organization recommendations, we're going to be removing from our platform. And so some of the brightest, most brilliant, most honest scientists and doctors were completely silenced. They were muzzled. They were treated as pariahs who could not be heard. And I think that was a mild version of what we can expect if this moves forward. Of course, we know the UN has huge amounts of troops at its command. In fact, if you really get technical about it, if you read the UN Charter, if the UN Security Council determines that there's a threat to international peace or security, they can usurp control of the armed forces of all the member states and deploy them for whatever they want. So these are the kinds of powers that we're talking about. Now, even before they have grabbed all these powers, we've seen what they have the power to do. In West Africa, when there was some concern about Ebola under the previous director general of the World Health Organization, they literally quarantined whole villages and whole countries at gunpoint using soldiers. And so I think we could expect to see much more like that. We could expect to see on the health front, for example, forced injections, forced medical treatment, forced testing. And we know what a fraud a lot of this testing is now. When we're talking about climate issues, we could expect to see forced lockdowns under the guise of stopping CO2 emissions. I mean, just imagine all the powers that the U.S. government has, completely unrestrained from any constitutional limitations like the U.S. government has at the international level in institutions dominated by ruthless totalitarians. And that's no exaggeration. I'm not using hyperbole here. One of the people I reached out to for my story was former Assistant Secretary of State for International Organizations, Ambassador Kevin Mulley. He served most recently in the Trump administration as Assistant Secretary of State, overseeing the U.S. government relationship with these international organizations. And one of the things that he and I have talked about this a lot over the years, the UN has basically become an arm of the Communist Party of China in a very real sense. The last time I looked, out of the 15 specialized agencies that the UN has, five of them are run by card-carrying actual members of the Communist Party of China, which incidentally has murdered more people than any other entity in all of human history. For some perspective, they continue to ruthlessly persecute the church. They continue to harvest organs from political prisoners. They continue to engage in genocide against the Muslims of Western China. They continue to engage in genocide against the Tibetans. And they would love to exterminate all the Christians, at least the Christians outside of the government-approved church. And to put that number in perspective, fully one-third controlled by card-carrying members of the Communist Party of China, the last time I looked, only one American was actually running a UN specialized agency. That was David Beasley at the largely insignificant World Food Program. And of course, he had kind of drank the Kool-Aid by that point. That's why they put him there. And I don't even believe he's there anymore. I believe he has stepped down and somebody new is running that agency. So that gives you a sense of who's running this. And when it's not a member of the Communist Party of China at the top, their deputy is a member of the Communist Party of China. Or like the case of Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus at the World Health Organization, he's a communist who owes his entire career to the Communist Party of China and who will therefore do whatever he is told to do. Now, I don't view the Communist Party of China as a threat in isolation. Of course, we all know they were built up, and you and I have talked about this on your program, Curtis. They were built up over a period of decades by Western globalists, the Rockefellers, the Kissingers, the Soroses, et cetera. But what we're dealing with here is a ruthless, murderous organization that is openly bragging now about its control over UN agencies. So imagine some of what we saw during the COVID response from Communist China, welding people into their buildings, corralling people into massive concentration camps, forcibly subjecting people to medical treatments, forcibly tracking every person in that country. Now imagine that at the global level, and I think you get a good sense. In fact, in the words of Ambassador Moley, approving this policy proposal by the Secretary General would be the equivalent of putting the Communist Party of China in charge of global response to emergencies. So that, I think, should send a chill down everybody's spine. I mean, even the most totalitarian wing of the Democrats at least publicly claims to be concerned about Communist Chinese tyranny. So very, very disturbing. When you look at the World Health Organization, I mean, same type of thing with these power grabs. It would be functionally a dictatorship of totalitarians with a long and demonstrated track record of hostility to God, hostility to Christians, hostility to liberty, and affinity for tyranny, for terror, and really for mass murder. So we need to be, I think, very, very concerned about this. You know, I reached out to the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman Mike McCaul of Texas. And, you know, I don't know how much he knew about this before I sent him the document. He sent me back kind of a tepid response expressing some concerns about how Biden might use this to advance his climate agenda and how it might infringe on our sovereignty and how it might be a waste of our tax dollars. And all that's nice. But I don't think that really captures the urgency and the danger of the situation, of the threat that we're facing here from this attempted power grab.
Yeah. In America here, we don't understand what totalitarianism really looks like. We don't have a clue. I've interviewed hundreds of people since I made my films that grew up in communist countries and just listened to them talk about what it was like. And many of them, I remember one was telling this horrific story of being just thrown in a prison and tortured. He had done nothing, but they wanted him to be scared to death of them. He said it happened to everybody at one time or another. They just arrest you. But as he was talking about that, it had been 50 years since that happened, and he was shaking. And I said right at that moment to him, I said, I don't have a clue what I'm talking about, do I? And he says, no Americans do. Even you that have studied communism, you don't know what these thugs are like when they actually get the power, when they're actually in total control. It's beyond your wildest nightmare you could ever come up with. And you're in utter fear all the time. You're an island because you're scared to talk to anyone, including family members, because you don't know who's been bought off. You don't know who's, you know, an informant for them. As I've done that, it sobered me to that reality. But people, that's what the UN is all about. It has been controlled by the Marxists since it was started. And back in the 80s, Trevor Loudon, a good friend of Alex and mine, he had a friend that had gone in undercover to the Communist Party in New Zealand. He got sent to Moscow for like a 3-year training program in the 80s before the wall came down and everything. And at those meetings, they were telling them, no, the UN is our organization. That's our vehicle for world government. Once it gets a world government through that, we will control that. And what Alex has been saying is showing that's the case. They are in the positions of power inside of that organization. And anyone that's not an actual communist is a socialist, is a fellow traveler, is someone that is in total agreement with them. But, Alex, what can people do about this? What are some simple things right where they are they could do to push back against this effort?
So many great points right there, Curtis. And I want to emphasize what you just said too before I talk about some ideas on what to do. You know, even the things that the UN does that people look at from the outside and think, wow, that looks like a good thing to do, even those, typically there's an ulterior motive. And I'll give two just real quick examples. One is a recent one. So I've spoken several times and I interviewed her for a number of publications, Emma Riley. She was a UN human rights official. And what she found out was they were having these hearings on communist Chinese abuses being perpetrated by the Communist Party of China. Well, what the UN was doing is they were taking all the names of the people who wanted to share evidence and testify and giving it to the Communist Party in China so that they could kidnap their relatives and torture their relatives and call them and say, look, you know, you want to keep sounding the alarm about what we're doing? We're going to kill your mom. We're going to kill your dad. We're going to torture your brother, right? So this is what they were doing and they got caught, okay? And this is not a new thing. When the UN was investigating Soviet atrocities perpetrated in Hungary, you know, people thought, oh, good, the UN is on this. They're doing something useful. Well, one of the guys who was involved was Pavel Bang Jensen, a wonderful Danish patriot, a Christian who loved the Lord, first he had fought the Nazis. Then he realized we had to fight the communists. And so he was working at the UN and he was playing a lead role in this hearing. Come to find out, they were taking all the names of the people who were trying to give evidence to this commission, and behind Pavel Bang Jensen's back, they were handing them to the Soviet government so they could go and torture the relatives and murder the relatives and friends of these people who were still trapped behind the Iron Curtain. So even when it looks like the UN is doing something good, they're probably doing something evil. And so we'll just leave it at that. Now, what to do about it, Curtis? I think that's such an important question. I would say from a spiritual perspective, we need to realize this is a spiritual war. This isn't just like people with bad ideas. This isn't just greedy guys who want some more money. And there are plenty of those, right? We know that. But this is much, much deeper than that. This is satanic. This is from the pit of hell. You know, by their fruit, ye shall know them. And the fruit of this organization is unmitigated wickedness everywhere it goes. And so we need to be in prayer. We need to be in God's word, asking for his guidance, asking for his wisdom and for his discernment, and of course, for humility. But, you know, we're up against something very, very significant that is evil, that fully intends to come after us, that fully intends to come after our children. So the wrong response would be fear. The correct response would be leaning entirely and trusting entirely in our Lord and our Savior and our King, Jesus Christ. He is sovereign. He's got this under control. None of this is a surprise to him, but we need to be in regular communication with our Heavenly Father, and he communicates with us primarily through his word. So be reading your Bibles. On the political front, you know, I would say there is a lot that we can do to stop this. First of all, get a meeting with your congressman. Right. Right now, there's a lot of funding bills coming up in Congress. Right. The House of Representatives has ultimately the power of the purse. And, you know, despite all the fake media, the fake news that, well, the Republicans are going to shut down the government if they don't do what Joe Biden says, they ultimately control what money is spent and how. If the Republicans who currently control the House say, we're not funding that, we're not giving money to the World Health Organization, we're not giving the Department of Health and Human Services money to implement the decisions of the World Health Organization, it dies. That's it. There's nothing that can be done by Joe Biden. He can rant and rave and he can scream and he can have his friends in the fake media say that Republicans are terrorists and Republicans are shutting down the government. Who cares, right? We all know the media is lying anyway. So they need to hold the line, but they will not do that unless you call them, right? And I've talked to multiple Republicans in Congress and they say, oh, we're going to defund that. We're going to defund that. Well, when push comes to shove, unless their constituents are breathing down their neck and saying, you must defund this, they're going to cave to the pressure. They're going to hear CNN calling them terrorists. They're going to see the CNN calling them traitors. And they're going to say, okay, we'll cave. Unless you get on the phone and with members of your community, with their constituents, make it crystal clear that that's unacceptable. If we lose at the House, there are other options as well. And some of these are already underway. In fact, just recently, I interviewed Representative Josiah Magnuson of South Carolina. They've introduced a wonderful bill to nullify the World Health Organization and its power grab in the state of South Carolina. It's a great bill. It's something that your legislators could basically copy and paste. If necessary, have your governor call an emergency session, because I know a lot of the sessions are ending. And I know, Curtis, you know a lot about this, having been a legislator. But it is critical that at the state level, we start fortifying our defenses. Even if Biden signs this, and even if the Republicans provide funding to implement it, they're not going to be able to do much without the assistance of our state and local governments. If your state government passes a law that says no state or local government employee, no state or local government resource may be used in the enforcement of any UN policy, World Health Organization policy, that tyranny basically stops at your state line. They don't have enough federal troops. They don't have enough people working at HHS and CDC to actually make these things a reality if your state and local governments won't help. So it's a powerful tool that you can use. Develop a relationship with your sheriff. None of this stuff is constitutional. Every sheriff in this country, unless they're frauds, in which case they should be removed, has put their hand on a Bible typically and sworn an oath to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution and the Constitution of their state. We need to say it loud and we need to say it often. None of this is constitutional. I'll say it again. None of this is constitutional. Even if they come up with some lame argument, even if they were able to get the U.S. Senate to ratify it, it's still not constitutional. The federal government cannot delegate powers to an international organization that it doesn't have itself. Right? The federal government was an organization, was an agent created by we the people and by our state governments. It was given a specific list of tasks, and we actually specifically said in there in the 10th Amendment, if it's not on that list, you can't do it. None of these things that the UN and the World Health Organization are asking for are within that list of things. Therefore, the federal government cannot grant those powers to anyone else unless we pass a constitutional amendment. If they want to try to pursue a constitutional amendment, let them try. But until then, none of this is constitutional, regardless of what Joe Biden says, regardless of what the CDC or even the federal courts say. So our governors and our sheriffs and our state legislators need to be interposing between us and them. They have a Christian duty to do so. Go read the book, The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates by Pastor Matt Trujillo. Read the Magdeburg Confession by the Christians who stood up and said, no, we are not going to submit to these wicked, illegal, monstrous decrees. We will defend ourselves if necessary. There's a long history. And of course, the Bible is filled with these kinds of stories of lesser magistrates interposing. I would go back to the beginning of Exodus. You have the Hebrew midwives interposing between Pharaoh and his wicked decrees and the Hebrew baby boys who were supposed to be killed by the midwives. There's a long tradition of them. We go to Acts chapter 5, verse 29. It's better to obey God than men. None of these things that they are envisioning are biblical. None of these things are constitutional. They are being lawless. And so our sheriffs, our mayors, our governors must stand in the gap. Not may, must stand in the gap. And so right now, if you're watching this, make a plan. Get together with some folks in your community, whether at your church or your local Republican Party or whatever community organizations you're involved in. Ask for a meeting with your state representative, with your state senator, with your governor, with your congressman, with your U.S. senators, and make very clear that none of this is acceptable and it must be stopped. And finally, I know I sound like a broken record every time I join you, Curtis, I say this, but you have to protect your children. You've got to pull them out of the public schools. They're being prepared for this vision that these totalitarians, these wicked totalitarians have. And they're actually being, it's worse than being indoctrinated. They're being conditioned like circus animals to not just accept this, but to desire this. So mom and dad, read your Bible. You don't have the right to hand your children over to Caesar for pagan, godless indoctrination. Protect them, either homeschool them or, you know, get in a good co-op, find a good Christian school near you, but make sure they're getting a good education. If America falls, which I don't think is outside the realm of possibility, we're going to need men and women of God to rebuild from the ashes. So, you know, think long term here. It's not just, you know, run around like a chicken with your head cut off from political crisis to political crisis. We've got to be thinking for the long term. We've got to be raising up godly generations after us for the future. And again, I'll just add one more time, be in prayer and be in the Word of God. These are very strange times. They're probably going to get much stranger before this is all over. So don't be scared. Just be in prayer and be in the Word of God.
Yeah. No, well, thank you for all that great advice. And people, you can take this video and share it with other people that might not understand what the UN's all about. So right there, you've awakened someone else that then can go have the meeting and listen to all the stuff Alex just said. There are things they can be doing to make a difference. Every little thing you do makes a difference. It's never a waste when you're spreading truth. It always just, it has fruit and it comes back. So, but Alex, your website is libertysentinel.org, libertysentinel.org. And I encourage people to go there. Tell them some of the things there that you have available.
Well, thank you, Curtis. And so one of the simplest things people can do if they want to sign up, I do a weekly newsletter. There's a little box that'll pop up there. Just put your email in. We won't sell it. We won't spam you. We won't send you a bunch of ads for stuff. Just, you know, the key items of the news that we think are important, maybe some interviews or whatever we think is critical for people to know each week. We also put up a lot of articles and videos from not just from me, but from wonderful patriots who love the Lord, people who are just doing important things, including your stuff as well, Curtis. I also serve as senior editor at The New American. We do a lot of great stuff there. It's at thenewamerican.com. You can subscribe for the print magazine if you'd like. And if you don't want to do that, or if you do, you can get signed up for the daily headlines. And again, critical news of the day without any of the fluff. And yeah, those are some of the places that people can find me. So
that's great. No, The New American is, I always have one sitting around. You need the print magazine because, again, it's a physical thing you have. You read it, you get informed, and you give it to Joe at work. And when he reads, he'll go, oh, my goodness, I didn't realize. And it's another person you've awakened to stand with us in defending the truth. It's so vital. Well, Alex, I always appreciate having you on. I appreciate your time very much and just appreciate you being with me.
Hey, thank you so much, Curtis. It's always an honor and a pleasure. Thanks for all that you do. And hopefully we'll catch up soon. And God bless you, sir.
Thank you so much. I hope that was a blessing to you. I always enjoy the interviews with Alex Newman. I always learn so much and appreciate his Christian beliefs that penetrate into his worldview and the way he sees what's going on. Please consider going to libertysentinel.org to get one of his products, sign up for his newsletter, or to donate to help him be able to keep doing all the different things he's doing. He is one of the great patriots in our country right now. Our verse for this week is 3 John chapter 1, verse 4. And in the midst of all the things going on, all these evil people doing their things, just remember, if you focus on your family and your children and your grandchildren, and you work to instill in them godly character, a fear of the Lord, and you teach and train them up in the way they should go, this verse right here explains what you'll receive by doing that. 3 John 1:4. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. There's nothing that will bring more joy to your soul than seeing the next generation walking in the truth, following the Lord, standing for what is right, sharing the gospel with their friends, being a light right where they are. Don't forget that. Life is busy with many different things, but we must never lose sight of training, teaching, discipling, mentoring the next generation is top of the list. But until next week, God bless you.